This is Colourful Radio.
The London paper, which I enjoy reading, that's been going for about 3 years, is soon going to disappear from our streets. The News Corporation, or News International, which is ultimately the publisher of it, says the losses have been too great and they're afraid that they're going to have to pull it with a loss of 60 jobs. What does this mean for the reading of free newspapers in London? And let's see if we can make some wider points about free newspapers in general, free journalism in general, because of course it's not surprising to realise it's the same newspaper group that's going to make you pay for internet access to their newspapers next year. Let's talk to our critic at large, Diren Adebayo, about this and many other things. Diren, good morning.
How are you doing, Mr. B?
Very well. You too?
Yeah, not so bad, not so bad.
Excellent. Now, have you been a regular reader of the London paper?
I've seen it quite often. Obviously, whenever you're by a tube station, or you know you're going into town or something, you know you tend to pick it up. One of the various people are outside the tube, thrusting it into your hand.
That's usually a young person of South Asian origin for some bizarre reason. I'm not quite sure why.
Yeah, I think because there are a lot of South Asian students, I guess.
You know,
often people do it as a part-time job, you know, to make some money whilst they study.
Okay.
But,
And they've been engaged in a deadly battle to the finish with London Light, because London Light was launched about a week before the London paper, and that was about 3 years ago, and the London paper has bitten the dust. Now, how surprising is that, do you think?
Well, not completely surprising, because, you know, there's even a third player in there, which is Metro, newspaper, which used to be, seemed to be a more dominant force until a few years ago. So I wasn't sure that the London market could sustain three free newspapers. And, one was quite likely to bite the dust. But, you know, the whole concept of freeness, you know, you wonder who is making money, how can this work? And obviously both London Light and the London paper, not surprisingly, were part of much bigger parent companies. Murdoch's paper was the London paper.
Yeah.
Murdoch and London Light, I believe, was Associated Newspapers.
That's like Metro as well, of course, yeah.
So that's the Daily Mail, the evenings, the London Standard, the Evening Standard, the bigger companies, if you like, have sustained this loss. But just as we're seeing in the online market now, where, for example, The Guardian, which makes money but loses money on its online area and also loses money with its sister paper, The Observer, all these newspapers are wondering, how can we, you know, we want to get out there, we want to be better known, but at the same time, how can we, how can we absorb these losses that come when we give out free content?
This is it. And do you think then that people are going to miss this paper, and do you think also that once it does go in sometime in September, that the Evening Standard Group or the Associated Newspaper Group might then think, okay, we've beaten them, now let's pull the London Light, because that's losing money too? Kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
It could be. It depends. Obviously, the London Light would still, these papers do get a certain revenue in advertising.
Mm.
So, not enough, it would seem. I would imagine enough. I don't quite know what the wider sort of strategy or the wider reasons for Associated Newspapers to have the London Light were, other than to thwart, say, other than to ensure that Murdoch didn't have a fairly free reign in that market.
Yeah.
But maybe they have wider strategic goals, which the London Light can still serve. But it's a weird thing, the whole freeness thing. I mean, you do notice that everybody takes freeness when it's offered.
Yeah.
You know, when it's offered to them, for example, outside the station. But I still feel that freeness does lead to a certain reduction in esteem for the product that's given free. I notice myself, say, even with books, you know, every now and again, you know, when you see a very beautiful girl or whatever, generally, one or two other people, you know, you give them a book for free, your own novel for free.
That's right.
And I notice that, generally speaking, when you give things to people for free, you know, they don't read it or they don't think it's any good.
Yes.
You know, and an old American, probably have to be an American, you know, once said to me this thing that, you know, don't give people things for free. On the contrary, when you sometimes, for example, if you're trying to sell something, it's even better to hike the price up, because people start to think that, well, there must be something, you know, serious in this thing for this person to be charging so much, you know. And obviously, high-end jewelers and of the type that got robbed the other day those people in a, you know, high-end jewelers, etc., you know, they operate on the same sort of concept. So I feel that, you know, often free content leads people to think that the writers in that newspaper or the writers, you know, they can't be all that good if they're giving it to us for free. free, and it's a weird one. We're still in the early days of this,
yep.
But online and all the rest of it. And I'll be interested to see how it all plays out.
Be very interesting to see what does happen indeed, Dylan. Let's move to the events at the Olympic Stadium in Berlin. A fantastic night's athletics last night with Usain Bolt breaking the world 200 metres record again. Absolutely sensational. A brilliant high jump, of course, with the women there. Vlanka Blasic of Croatia winning that duel with the Russian and the German darling. And of course, the decathlon, although I'd no longer pay as much time and attention to the decathlon not necessarily since the days of Daley Thompson, but Brian Clay was, I suppose, the last big figure as far as decathlon was concerned. But first of all, the Caribbean domination of the headlines here, I mean, it's truly impressive, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, obviously, especially when you just consider the numbers involved, you know, that the larger Caribbean islands have got, a couple of million, three or 4 million, Jamaica, you know, and, you know, compare that to the, you know, I guess in the Caribbean there must be less than 10 million people all told, and you compare that to the juggernaut that is America. And, you know, I always enjoy it, to be honest, when, if you like, smaller black countries, you know, beat the big beast that is the state. So this period has been fantastic. But it does also tell you that maybe you don't need as many people as you think to be world champions in something, you know. And I've been very, very pleased, because apart from anything else, the Caribbean success has been going on already for a very long time. It was over 30-odd years, you know, maybe 30, 40 years. Go back to the Don Quarries, etc. Or even Juan Terrain in Cuba.
Merlinotti as well.
That's Merlinotti. You know, so many people down the years that it tells you that it's not just, if like, talented people, but there must be a system in place there that is that works well. And if you contrast that to the utter shabbiness of West Indies cricket, where the administrators have managed to completely waste, you know, quality inheritances in terms of, you know, players, it's very good. It's nice to hear that, just like, you know, when Obama got in and there was a tribute not just to his skills but to the organisation behind him.
Yes.
It's always great when, if like a black country or whatever comes through from sort of organisational reasons, etc. So yeah, no, it's been great.
It's been amazing. And say a little something about the impact that Usain Bolt has had on the way in which people celebrate and the way in which they behave when their name is announced, because even Asafa Powell has been rolling his eyes and sticking little name tags or numbers on his face. I mean, it's astonishing because this man is normally trapped inside his shell.
That's right. I mean, obviously, Bolt is in a fantastic position because he is so good, you know, he's so beyond his peers that maybe it allows him to do his little things before the race, the little things you're not supposed to do, the things that so apparently take away your focus.
Yes.
He knows pretty much that whatever he does, he's still going to win it, you know. and so maybe, you know, other people are looking to him so much now. I think obviously Usain Bolt has been great, and so much about him I like a lot, not least that he talks about cricket sometimes.
Yes.
But I wouldn't want, at the same time, I'm slightly against this thing whereby there can only be like one big star at any one moment.
Yeah.
Because obviously the Caribbean female athletes have done very, very well before. And I remember there was a moment after Beijing last year when Bolt had won, but also Veronica Campbell had won and Shelly-Ann Fraser had won, etc. There were sort of three or four athletes. There was Usain Bolt and three Jamaican athletes. And all the press people were just taking pictures of Usain Bolt. And the women were sort of left in the cold a bit. So, yeah, it's a wide sort of success. But obviously, Bolt is a phenomenon. And even Michael Johnson, who I suspect must have felt that his preeminence was going to be there for a long time, you know. You know, Johnson, of course, has now shuddered. And he's gone, you know, Johnson has lost a 200 metres world record. And he's going to lose his 400 metre world record.
Yes, he is.
Possibly if Bolt moves on up ahead. And, of course, that would be almost the final frontier for Usain Bolt, to be the first person to dominate at 100, 200 and 400, which is a different skill.
This is Colourful Radio.
Yes, indeed, it's Colourful Radio. It's a breakfast show with Juju and Henry Bonsu. And I'm glad to say, joining us on the line still, we have Mr. Dhiren Adebayo. You all right, Dhiren?
I am fine, Juju.
Good.
I hear you've been away for a few days.
Yes. Having a rest, it was needed, trust me. Although 48 hours, I sense, is not really enough. But never mind. Just looking in the Daily Mail, there's an article about Caster Semenya, and I want to have a little chat with you about that. I just want to read you this piece here. It says he's their science editor, and it says, what this sorry affair teaches us is that sport, with its emphasis on precise measurements and defined quantities, is badly equipped to cope with something as vague and emotionally charged as human sexual orientation. In the world of athletics, you come first or you lose. But when it comes to being male or female, it really is possible to be something in between. Now, obviously, they don't know if this is the case with Semenya. We don't know yet. But if that is the case, and if there is some kind of biological issues going on where, for want of a better term, she could be somewhere in between, what do you think will happen?
Well, I guess that there must be a kind of a cut-off point, i.e. that it's certainly true, obviously, as the science editor says, and I'm sure he or she's more of an expert than I am, it's certainly true that most of us, we're all of us in some continuum, i.e. obviously none of us have, to be a woman doesn't mean that you have 100%, if you like, female hormones, you know, and to be a man means it doesn't mean that you have 100%, but all of us have got 60%, you know, all of us made between, you know, got 70% of one, 30% of the other, you know, I'm sure this is a very sort of an inexact way to talk about it, but we are all in a kind of a continuum. So, but I guess for the athletics board, you know, there is a certain point where they say beyond that point, you know, you're a man, and before then you're a woman. And I would guess it would be maybe it's even a 51-49% thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you have 51, and obviously their particular. I mean, you would. I presume that it's not just about whether or not, for example, you have male or female sexual parts, you
exactly.
know, bodily parts. It's something more than this, as I say, to do with hormones and all the rest of it. But you know, unless those, you know, hormones have been given to you artificially, they've been, you know, added to you after you were born, then obviously it would seem to be very unfair to penalise somebody, you know, for the stuff that was in them, you know, the chemicals, etc., that were in them when they're born.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, though, isn't it, Darren? Because you can see why as a number of people are very, very unhappy with this, because one of the reasons why we take such a tough line on drugs that we're supposed to is that we're against any unfair advantage, okay?
That's right,
You know, that's been given artificially. In the case of this young woman, okay, only 18 years old, to improve your personal best by 8 seconds in 1 year is extraordinary. Although when you're very young, you do make progress by leaps and bounds, don't you, in any sport, because you're still growing. But then to see her bodily shape, okay, very, very narrow hips, very wide shoulders, the build of a young man, you know, and to be beating top-class women, including the world champion from 2 years ago, by nearly 2.5 seconds. It seems extraordinary. You can see why people are going to question this, especially given that the South African Federation themselves knew about this but didn't take any major action, partly because it's alleged they wanted a gold medal.
Yeah, okay. Maybe the South African Association has been at fault to some degree. That's the impression I'm getting behind the sort of headline.
This shouldn't be happening in the public gaze, should
it? Exactly. That was my feelings. Was that, you know, if even you're suspected of drugs, of a drugs violation, they don't. That's not made public that you are a suspect until they've been through all the tests, and if you like, you've been found guilty.
Yeah.
And here's a woman who isn't even suspected of, as I say, of having had something added to herself that gives her unfair advantage, and yet already she's been named and shamed. You know, and in this most sensitive of areas, I didn't understand why it couldn't have been done behind the scenes. You know, she'd been allowed to run her race, accept the acclaim now, because obviously you're innocent before being, you know, before being found guilty.
Yeah.
And then behind the scenes, they do their tests, and then if there's a problem a couple of months later, they announce it, you know. I thought it was very, very, you know, it was very bizarre, actually, and it was amazing that she managed to come through and do so well in the race, and very unfortunate she didn't even get any, she didn't really get any clapping after her amazing performance the other day.
Oh, no, I hope she is mentally strong and able to deal with this, because, of course, she's only 18 years old. She might not look it, but she is. And that's a very fragile time, isn't it, for a young woman?
And the world is now thinking that she's some kind of a freak, you know, and that's very hard to deal with.
Something else that's possibly tricky, though, Darren, because if she is deemed to be a woman and then starts reducing the time down to 1:53, you know, the world record is from Jarmila Kratochvilova from the Czech Republic, who looked more like Andy Townsend than a woman. You know, she was massively muscled, of course. Yeah. There was a massive Eastern European doping regime back then. I mean, and I personally think that many of those records from that era should be erased anyway.
They're ridiculous records.
But what if she really is genetically more a man than a woman, then she's going to reduce the time to 150, 149, 148, because these are standard times for B-runners in male competition.
Yeah, they are, but I mean, it's a very difficult area, because you could argue as well that elite athletes themselves tend to be the very extreme of a human. You know, you'd have to be to be the fastest or, you know, jump the furthest. You yourself tend to be very extreme. So she's just another type of extreme, you know, person. Do you know what I mean? In the way that Bolt is an extremity, she's an extremity. And if it's a natural extremity, then, you know, what do? Do you know what I mean? If she is biologically a woman, then, you know, you have to learn. Because, of course, we already know that. Of course, there are other women that we know who have, you know, broad shoulders and, you know, whatever.
Narrow hips.
Sure, it happens sometimes.
Yeah, but even with people like Maria Mutola, you know, I think she was of Mozambique, a lot of people are very shocked to see her lining up alongside more sylph-like women, you know, in the 800 metres and the 1500 metres. But there were limits to her ability. She was brilliant, but she could go as fast as 1:55 or so. That was at the peak performance, you know. It wasn't when she was 18. But let's see what happens with this, Darren, because we don't want to prejudice everything.
Sometimes it takes your time to adjust. Because I do remember when I first saw the French tennis athlete, female, I've forgotten her name now. She did win one Grand Slam, one or two.
Oh, Amélie Mauresmo.
Yeah. I remember when I first saw her playing Hingis, I thought, what was this man doing on court? Do you know what I mean? I thought she'd had a sex change, to be honest. That was a man who had a sex change. But then after a little while, a couple of years, you know, seeing her on various things, you know, she now looks, you know, quite the woman to me, you know, and
She's just grown her hair, that's all.
She's grown her hair, okay. But just maybe with this South African athlete, we need to see a bit more of her, do you know what I mean? I mean, I didn't look at her very closely. I wasn't, the face seemed quite mannish, to be honest, but I don't know, man.
Well, South Africans are apparently outraged that she's been criticised in any way. Some of them accusing critics of racism. You know, they're saying, well, this is outrageous, you know, because she doesn't conform to the stereotype of, you know, European white female beauty. But it's not that, of course. I mean, you know, she doesn't look like an African woman either. She just looks like a young African male. That's a fact. No, but it's true. She looks like a young African male. I'm not dissing her in any way by saying it. It's just a fact, you know?
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, what about the first week of the Premiership, Darren? I mean, your team, Tottenham, doing brilliantly, top of the Premiership. Juju's team, Liverpool, come back strong, winning 4-0 the other night.
But in the more important match, the Spurs-Liverpool match, they came up short.
Yes.
Of course, I'm delighted. I mean, for the first time, I think, in over 20 years, I've been able to look at the league table and see that Spurs are top of it, you know? More seriously, I'm just hoping it's a season where money is challenged, you know, where all the big money teams are challenged. I mean, am I the only one who's bored, who feels this is too much like Scotland?
No, you're not.
In England these days, you know, it's just these same four teams. You know, I can't believe that, you know, we've only had, the season's only been on for less than a week, and Man United have been on. You know, they've been selected to be the main match, be it on radio or TV, about three times already, you know. They were on Wednesday and they were on Sunday on the Radio 5, and it just does my head up. I've just enough of those four teams. I want anybody else will do, you know, anybody else will do. Mm. And especially if it's Spurs, obviously. So, yeah, I just want a change, you know. We've needed it for some years. It's so boring, you know. Every week they hype up, this week it's Arsenal v. So. You know, it's Arsenal versus Madrid. You know, the few weeks later, it's Madrid versus Arsenal. Then it's Bayern versus just these. They've just managed to, certain clubs have managed to entrench their power over this decade. And, you know, they've got fairer. You want something different, I think, anyway.
Definitely. If Manchester United and Manchester City finish at the bottom, I think there'll be a lot of people happy around this nation.
I'm really feeling something. I'm so pleased that Man United went down the other night. I want the top topsy-turvy league where different teams beat other teams.
Yeah.
Different weeks, you know, just some excitement.
I'm happy with a more topsy-turvy league. I wasn't impressed with Man United's defeat the other night, but I understand why you might say it's good for the game. Okay, and cricket finally, Darren. Not far away from here is the Oval, where later on today we'll see what England can do against Australia. Not a good start to the fifth and final test, of course. Freddie Flintoff, the man on who so much is hopes are expected and resting.
I think he got seven yesterday,
seven,
didn't he?
Yeah.
He did, yeah.
So is it over for England, Darren?
No, I mean, I felt they should have made more yesterday. I think they could have been maybe 100 runs more on that wicket. It's very difficult to say. I mean, it feels to me that we're dealing with two kind of moderate sides, really. I think Australia have got slightly better batting, and it may be that really helps them in this match. You know, if England do lose this match, then, or lose the series, then really, you know, they can't complain too much because they won the toss 4 times out of 5,
yep.
And they won it yesterday, which was a key toss, and they haven't quite done enough. They do look to have a brittle middle order, you know, with Peterson out, they seem to have, you know, 3 or 4 players in that middle order who aren't up to all that much, you know, between them in 6 innings last time that middle order got the least, one of the least numbers of runs between them in history, in the fourth test. We'll have to see. You know, we'll have to see. You know, 2005 felt very much more like a great Australian team and an English team that rose, had risen to the challenge.
Yeah.
Whereas this feels a little bit more like 2 sort of moderate sides. And I would have to say, for somebody who's watched Test cricket for a very long time, that, you know, standards aren't what they were. You know, even the pitches are blander. But this oval pitch used to be a very quick pitch. It was the nearest thing that England had to a true, hard, fast pitch that you get in the hot country, like in Barbados and Australia. But now the oval pitch is slower, it's blander. It's difficult to explain if you don't play cricket, but these pitches are less interesting. And it just makes it feel that the standards of bowling have gone down, the standards of the pitches have gone down. So that when you compare for like something like a Viv Richards, say, and the average he got, which was about 50, he'd got it in a time when bowling was a very high standard. And these days, there are going to be a lot of mediocre players who have averages way above kind of what they deserve.
So, Darren, to conclude, we can say it's a dumbing down of cricket and speeds and technique on uninteresting pitches.
a lot of things have happened. I mean, and it's nearly always to do with money. You know, people think that batsmen scoring sixes and scoring big shots is the only interesting thing, but it looks on TV, it's an easy sell.
Yeah.
Whereas bowlers taking wickets on pitches that give them some help, that have got some speed in them and some movement, is less interesting, people think, because it's a slightly more nuanced kind of pleasure.
Yeah.
And everything's done in sort of money, but you will kill these things, be it in football or be it in cricket, you'll kill the golden goose if all you think about is money.
Darren, that was a warning indeed. Thank you very, very much indeed for spending so much time with us this Friday morning. It's been great to talk to you.
Likewise. Have a lovely weekend.
You too. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Cheers. Take care. Bye.
See you. Bye.
This is Colourful Radio.